Welcome to the Aletheia Leaders Podcast. This is Donnie Fisher. Glad to be here with you today. I'm the executive pastor here at Aletheia. As always, I'm with my co-host, Sarah McCarthy.
Hey, guys.
And our wonderful producer, Tyler Parker.
It's me.
Yes, it is you. Thank you for coming back, Tyler. I appreciate that.
I do what I can.
But we're excited today because we have with us another staff member who's been a kind of volunteer staff member for a long time. The one and only Flo.
Hello.
Flo, woo! Thank you so much for being here with us.
Tyler, I didn't know that you were producing.
That's right. I'm going to add applause over that, which everybody's already heard because I've put the applause over. Welcome, Flo.
Over Sarah's woo.
And so. The woo, too. And the woo
Sarah's
too.
Woo doesn't need any applause over it. Yeah. Communicates
pretty,
all the excitement
powerful.
We need.
That is true. That's right. Well, leaders, we're excited today because... not just because Flo's with us, because she is definitely awesome. She's awesome.
It's literally point number one on the outline for today that Flo is awesome.
I did not write this outline.
It's true. Why is she awesome, Sarah?
Oh, I don't even know where to start. For those of you who don't know Flo, she's been around our church for several years.
How many years, Flo?
Four
years.
I remember meeting you at the Connection Area on your first Sunday at Aletheia. There are
you
very few
first.
People that I remember meeting
yes.
on their first Sunday, wow. but Flo is one of them. So she's been special from the beginning.
Did she have you laid it on a couch right then and there and begin helping you work through your problems?
Yes. No, the first time she asked me how my soul was doing at the Connection Area on her first Sunday.
Yes. Flo is great. She helps us all love Jesus more and have a better and right view of ourselves in the process, I think. But Flo, many of you may remember, was part of a previous episode. She is the O in the show Delina with Cher, Flo, and Adelina, who helped us talk through how to create great relationships within our groups. And so this is something that Flo is passionate about and has really kind of, I think, helped us take it up to another lot, not take it to another level in our church, I'll say it that way. But today we're going to be talking actually the issue of mental health. And the reason why we have Flo in here, this is something that she's passionate about, thinks about. She has degrees in this area.
One
degree in this area. But even moving beyond that, just conceptually about how to achieve or maintain mental health, specifically for you as leaders, we want to begin to talk through and think through the issue of when you encounter someone who's struggling within your sphere of influence. How do you come alongside them? How do you serve them? How do you love them? How do you even begin that conversation? And so that's what we're here to talk about today.
Yeah. Flo, do you want to start us off by just telling us a little bit more about where you've seen this need in our church and in our city and why this is an important thing for us to be talking about?
Honestly, I think the need is very visible. I think there are a lot of people in the city that struggle with various challenges, and you hear people talking about it. Actually, this is one of the good things in Boston. Hmm. We do talk about it. There are other cities and places where it's not even talked about. So that's a good start.
Yeah.
Yeah. The need, though, really, I think in the spiritual family is that we can't just know that, oh, maybe someone's struggling with this or struggling with that and not know what to do about it. And particularly in a church family, I think we need to know how to do that for each other, not as mental health professionals like myself, mm-hmm. but just spiritually be each other's keeper, be each other's family member. So. Mm. Yeah.
So are you saying we need to be equipped, Flo?
Yes. To me, it's a measure of love. Like, nice. You know, you can't say that, oh, I understand who you are or I care about you, and then you don't really mm-hmm. go about knowing what that means.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So in our time together real fast, so what are we trying to accomplish here for our leaders? What are we doing in this conversation and recording, and what are we not doing in this conversation and recording?
We are not trying to diagnose anybody.
Yes.
Or yourself.
Yes.
Yes.
Please do not do that. I would advise that you would go to a professional for that, not mm-hmm. that anyone wants to be diagnosed. Mm-hmm. That's part of some of the stigma around mental health. But we do need doctors. We do need help and professional help at that.
Yeah, and I think what we are trying to help our leaders with is more, and I'll even give an example of this, like as we go about leading in our church, even just as we go about being in any community and we see people around us who are struggling, how do we come alongside them and help them, recognizing our limitations, not being professionals and not being able to provide professional help, but still as a community, how can we come alongside them?
Yes.
Which leads into my question for you, Flo. So if I'm a new group leader or a new team leader or really just even have a friend in the church.
Or a veteran leader.
Yeah. And there's somebody who say has come into my group and I've just noticed like she seems really down lately. She's not really talking anymore. She's showing up to less stuff. And I'm worried about her, you know, mental health or that she's struggling with something she hasn't shared with me. Where do I even start? Like, where would you recommend that somebody start with having that conversation? Like, I'm worried about someone. What do I do next?
I think it's with any one that you are worried about, mental health or not, you put in intentional time to look them up. Like, text them, say, hey, I've noticed that you haven't been around. Is something happening? Can I be praying for you? Do you want to go out for coffee? Right? Like, that starts there.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are people who may or may not be ready to speak about it, but at least you've invited them into a conversation. And people who know me, I am unfazed by just going directly to the person.
Do you actually invite them or do you command them?
And I do not command. Whoa. I do not. I do probably stare at quite, them a little
you're
bit.
You're quite gentle, but effective nonetheless.
I mean, I do look at people and maybe I have more of an intuition or I'm sensitive to what people look like emotionally on their faces.
Yeah.
I think just awareness and a sensitivity of not just minding your own business, but looking around and going, oh, I think she seems a little off, you know, like maybe I should just go up to her and say, hey, is something happening? How are you? And just start from there.
And what do you do once you've started that conversation? Like, how do you walk through if you ask someone what's wrong and they just say, yeah, I've been feeling really sad lately, or, you know, this hard thing has just happened. Do you have questions you'll typically ask or like a way of going about having that conversation to really get at what's going on?
There are no cookie cutter questions, but I would say that there is an art of asking questions where you don't just take surface level answers. I know that some
people... No one has ever accused Flo of taking a surface level answer.
I know that it can rub people the wrong way too, you know, like just, oh, I don't want to say something. Why are you asking me so many questions? But I would caveat the conversation sometimes with, I actually just want to care about you and I want to know what's happening. You might want to ask questions that are like more curiosity, you know, like just what's been happening lately that's making you sad? You know, how is work? How's family? Like give them some broad categories that you can then get specific with. I think when you think about mental health, like if you already know someone who is struggling with, for example, anxiety or depression, like good questions to follow up would be, what has that been like for you lately? You know, what does it look like? And maybe it's to do with sleep. Maybe it's to do with motivation. Maybe it's to do with just, I can't get out of bed, you know? So getting a little bit more specific as to, I mean, we call it symptoms, but it's just someone's physical, mental, emotional health and descriptive words towards those areas.
Yeah.
So those are good leading questions. And I think once you get them started talking, then you find out more questions that are behind what they are saying. And for me, I like to say, like, I want to get to the heart that's behind it. And I think as you ask questions, you know, don't be like an interrogator, even though I think sometimes we can, you know, seem like we're interrogating someone. But if you are trying to get to the heart, of things, even just recognizing that, wow, that sounds really hard, and recognizing the pain or the frustration, recognizing that this is really something that is exhausting. Mental health is exhausting.
Sure. You know?
So, yeah.
So can you give us like a, maybe for someone who's listening to this and is either a new leader or a veteran leader, and they just never really had a moment with somebody they're leading or in their group, and they've never had to press into something like this. Could you give us kind of a classic example of how that conversation would go? I don't mean like a true role play here or anything like that, but just a quick, like, okay, so for example, you might notice somebody is down and you ask this question, they respond this way. Like, you know, like just, can you demystify that? Tyler, you can clean that up, but you see what I'm saying? Can you demystify what a moment like that in your experiences look like in the past?
I don't even know how to demystify something. But I would think first daily functioning, you know, like the Maslow's pyramid of needs.
The needs, yeah.
You have to start from, okay, are they sleeping? Are they eating? You know, are they isolated? Are they alone? You know, have they reached out for support? If they talk about thoughts of like harming themselves, is it specific? Is it not? You know, how often do they have irrational thoughts? So, you know, like things like that, where you just notice certain things. But at the back of my head, like I would know, oh, these are some of the things that would indicate to me, oh, wow, like they're really not doing well. I should follow up more. Mm-hmm. Or is it just I'm having a bad week and so I haven't been sleeping well this week? But then if that goes on for 4 weeks straight, that's an indication of something else. So I would look for severity. I would look for intensity, frequency, and how much it affects the daily functioning. And really it is back to the, are you sleeping? Are you eating? Are you alone? Are you thinking something that you don't normally think about? And I would actually ask people to tell me, well, tell me what thoughts you're having right now. Like what are the cyclic thoughts that are going on in your mind? And then you can kind of go from there and go, oh, all right, well, how did you get there? You know, why are you thinking that way? Did something happen? And usually it's a good lead into other things. I would also be aware of how they're doing with God. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, how are you doing in your time with God? And when they start saying, well, I actually haven't been talking to God, or I'm angry, then I might say, well, what are you angry at? Or who are you angry with? And did something happen to lead to that? So it really is a step-by-step process of that kind of conversation.
Yeah. I think it's a good point. It's kind of the art of asking questions, like just knowing, coming back to that idea of we've got to listen. We've got to truly be listening so that we know what the next question is. Not that we're looking to keep them talking, but to really listening beyond even their just quick answer.
And you look for clues in the answers to go off by, like, you know, why are you? Well, I'm angry. You can't just say, oh, okay. You know, like, it can't just stop there. You have to say, well, why are you angry? And when did you get angry? And like, did something happen to make you angry? You know, like you just have to go with the little bit deeper at a time. And it tells a lot of things that are underneath the anger, which is just an external emotion, right?
Sure. And I mean, we've all had that at some point or another, right? Somebody's asked us a question and we've came to the answer, and then they've asked us a deeper question that we didn't want to answer, right? So I had this last week. I was talking on the phone with a friend of mine, and I said, he's like, how are you doing? I was like, I'm tired. And he's like, what are you tired of? And I explained what I was tired of. And I was driving, so I wasn't really paying attention to my answer. And he was, I'm not going to say it now, but he was like, whoa, what did you just say? And then I realized what I had said in the can of worms that I opened that I didn't want to deal with at the moment. And it wasn't Flo this time, but it was somebody else asking me a question. Yep. And I'm thankful that he was listening beyond just, oh, tonight I need to take a nap. Like, mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
I didn't need a nap. I need to, there's some things I need to deal with. And I'm glad I had a friend who said, mm-hmm. hey, well, let's talk about that. You mm-hmm. know, not in a condescending or, you know, arrogant way, but in a loving way. Like, yeah. And
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And besides questions, I think one good thing, I did mention this in the family conversation on mental health, even just saying, tell me more about that, you know, have it open-ended. Say like, can you tell me more about that? Like, I want to try to understand what's happening here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think one of the things I know for me that can be intimidating about having that conversation is not knowing what I'm going to do with the information once
right.
I have it.
That's key.
Like it can be sometimes intimidating to even start the conversation because I'm like, what if somebody tells me something that I then don't know what to do with? So I guess, Flo, it would be awesome to hear from you. What are some of the steps we can take to help somebody who is struggling? Like, what are some of
beyond
the practical things? Right. Like, once we've had this conversation and have learned, like, okay, this person is feeling, you know, has been feeling down for a long time or is really struggling with anxiety, what are some of the things that we can do to come alongside them and walk with them in that?
One thing is to figure out their support structure. So if you are the only person who is walking with them through a hard time, not to say that you should just then, you know, pass them off to somebody, that's horrible.
Yeah.
But it always should be more than one person. Like, it's yeah. hard to have one person bear the burden, so to speak, which that's not true, actually. You can cut that one out. Like, let's restart that. Examine the support structure so that there will be more than one person and preferably a group of people that will be supporting them as friends and maybe in different roles and capacities. Mm. If they have some unhealthy maybe things that they're turning to, being that person who is keeping them accountable and checking up on them. Like, it does require intentional thought. Particularly if someone says, like, I am thinking of harming myself in some way, like, that is an immediate flag to then ask, like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Have you specific thoughts of that? So I think not being afraid of just asking, well, how do you want me to help as well? I've actually done that a number of times where you don't assume that they want help in a certain way. You just say, hey, I recognize this is hard for you. How can I come alongside you? And then maybe you can make some suggestions, but just leave it open.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think people really do need, like, community and, like, you know, definitely here at Aletheia, the main way that people get tied into spiritual family is our community groups, right? Like, not just our sort of like Sunday gatherings. It has been super important. Even me, like, struggling with mental health in the past, like, it's been super helpful to have like a support system mm-hmm. and not to have like just one person sort of bearing all of the weight of a specific burden, but to have different people who can have different perspectives and also like different ways of addressing or encouraging me in a specific moment. I think that's super helpful. So yeah, I guess maybe my question here is like, what do you think that you can do if somebody, for instance, is experiencing some sort of isolation or church hurt? Like they feel a resistance to joining a community group or like are suspicious of people who belong to Jesus, maybe because of ways that they've been hurt in the past.
I would call out the hurt first mm-hmm. and say, yeah, I understand that you've been hurt by family or friends in the past, and just call that out first and mm-hmm. say, you know, I'm sorry that happened to you. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think it's important to understand a lot of people turn to isolation, or they just, yeah, they don't trust people, right? Mm-hmm. And I would even say, you know, I'm not saying I'm someone that is totally trustworthy, but I'm willing to be there and I want to listen. Mm-hmm. I think it goes a long way to say, like, I am willing to learn, I'm willing to listen, and I'm sorry that happened to you. Mm-hmm. And I think it breaks down so many walls mm-hmm. before you even go any further, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to push anyone along. Like, you can't really push anyone towards, oh, you just gotta trust spiritual family. You can. Like, and a lot of those relationships take a while to build. I though would say, hey, I've been there in the past, and being isolated is also not the way to go. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't be isolated. Yeah.
Maybe another thought is, like, if you recognize that somebody else in the church, or somebody else that you know, I guess, has struggled with a similar circumstance, to, like, ask the person, hey, can I get this other person to, like, join us for, like, coffee or tea yep. or a meal or something?
Yeah.
We can all get together and kind of, like, just crowdsource ways of helping, you know?
Yes.
I think that that's also sort of a subtle way to, like, invite people into community.
I've also found testimonies to be a really good hope building thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, to say, oh yeah, I was just talking about this with someone, and I've really learned a lot from them. And what does that look like? Right. And just mm-hmm. testifying of how God can come through, and not to say that, oh, sometimes there's full healing immediately. In fact, most of the time it's not, it's a process. However, I think people need glimpses of hope. They need to, like, really be reminded, okay, I am loved, I am I can be safe with God. But they need to be reminded of that, and what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
So
how does this idea of just starting the conversation and asking questions, but also figuring out with the person what some concrete ways are to come alongside them, I guess for any of you, how does this differ if based on your gender? Like, girls obviously have an easier time as a general rule with asking these questions directly and, you know, going out to coffee and talking about our deepest, darkest sure. secrets at 1369 on a Monday afternoon.
I hate that place. It's so feelingsy. I don't like that place.
So full of feelings all the time.
The coffee shop is full of feelings.
It is, man.
You can just walk in and feel.
I just walk by it and
I
shudder.
Yeah. Just give us discounts.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I was just to hear Tyler, because he's definitely a younger generation than I am. But but Tyler, you half my age. How old are you?
I'm 23.
23. Okay, yeah. I'm a little older than that. So, I'm 38. Nice. Yeah, I'm 38. And so,
how does that make you feel, Donnie?
How does it make me feel?
Oh, wow. Actually, don't answer your feelings now, Donnie.
Well, I'm not going
us.
To talk to you about it. That's for right. sure.
No, that's okay.
So,
that's okay.
Wow.
You got to draw me closer than that, Tyler.
Okay.
So, all right. But,
takes time.
Takes time. No, I was thinking about this a little earlier. I think, ladies, correct me wrong, I don't want to be like some gross generalization or like reinforce wrong stereotypes, but most stereotypes are based in at least a little bit of truth. Guys don't, in my experience, men are much more likely to talk about their issues, or their issues is such a strong word there. What's bothering them or what's eating at them when they're not face to face sitting over coffee, but while they're actually accomplishing something together. So, they're doing a work together. They might be having fun together. They might be going to a baseball game. They might be, if you're me, building a chicken coop, I don't know, talking about something, having an experience together that's not based around that. I found that I've been able to broach that conversation a whole lot more easily than, hey, let's grab coffee where I'm going to dive into your life. In my experience, especially with people I don't know as well, Tyler can say this, but like, if it's, say it's a guy who's new to my group and I'm just beginning to notice some stuff, if I dive right in, like that seems more of a violation. if our relationship hasn't been built on some commonality first. Not that you can't do it. And I have the word pastor attached to my name, so I get away with it more than some, I think. Mm. But as a general rule, it helps to, like I say, have that conversation alongside somebody rather than across the table from them.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, so I have a slightly different experience than Donnie. Maybe it's because I'm a millennial, I would like to say.
Snowflake.
But, yeah, that's right.
I don't believe that, but kind of do. But go ahead.
Like a little bit. It's okay. Being a campus minister at Harvard, I interact with a lot of students, a lot of athletes especially. And I think one of the biggest issues for guys, and also one of the biggest issues like for relations between men and women, is that guys generally are not as good at articulating how they're feeling and why. And a lot of that comes from just like compartmentalizing different areas of their life to try to be more productive. So like if something happened with my girlfriend and it's like really frustrating, I'm like not gonna talk about it because I have all this other stuff to do. And because it's like, I think just generally it's like societally harder for men to be vulnerable with each other, or vulnerable in general than for women to be vulnerable. And I'm saying that only from like societal pressure, not necessarily that it's like inherently harder for men to be vulnerable or something. It could be, I don't know. But I kind of take it as a mission to like, when I'm having students or when I'm sitting down talking with students, to first make them feel quote unquote safe. And when I say safe, I mean like I came from a Southern Christian background where like the way I practice my Christianity was by projecting righteousness because I didn't want to be judged by other people. And because that's just what I thought it meant to be a good Christian. But like in order for us to really get to the like nitty gritty of being broken and flawed before Jesus, who saves us in that state, like by grace you have been saved through faith and this is not of your own doing. Like I have to create a space that is like quote unquote safe for students, particularly men, to tell me what's really going on in their lives and not feel judged.
For them to reveal the unrighteousness.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because that's like, that's a part of the gospel, right? It's like, you got to be dead in your trespasses for God to like be rich in mercy, you know, like to reach down and like, and save you. Right. And you have to admit that you're dead in your trespasses. And I feel like for a lot of mental health issues or just like emotional issues, like men have a really hard time articulating something's wrong. When I'm sitting down with folks, I use emotive words. I suggest potential things. So I'm like, you know, okay, your girlfriend broke up with you. Like, how is that making you feel? Maybe they don't want to answer that question. And I would be like, well, you know,
like if it punching was, you in the face, Tyler.
Yeah, right. Sure. Which is great. If that is even like as productive, if they say if, like punching you in the face, because now it's clear, like you're angry. You know, like great. Let's just say that. You know what I mean? But like I would say, well, you know, like if I had been dating somebody for 2 years and all of a sudden like they didn't want to see me anymore, that would make me feel like blank. Is that similar to how you
punching
feel?
Punching myself in the face.
Yeah, it would make me feel like punching myself in the face. Is that how you feel? And they might say like yes or no or something. And it's just kind of like a way of introducing people to naming and communicating their emotions. And if there's anything that I've learned from also being around college age women, it's that they love guys who can communicate. Like if you just like
we're now bridging over into relational advice.
It's a different podcast. But it's true. I mean, I just think that like Christians gotta be better, especially Christian men, like as a way of like laying our lives down for like women. Like we have to be able to like communicate with women in the ways that they speak. And like if they care about where our brains are at or like where our emotions are at, to be able to say that like clearly is mad helpful. So that's all I have to say.
If they really care, they wouldn't have to ask. But that was a joke.
Wow. I mean, I think that what Tyler is talking about is also just giving permission to each other to be vulnerable and to be weak and to say, well, no, actually, in our weakness, that isn't a judgment. It's actually just a truth that we are weak. And that's why we need Jesus, you know, like it's, mm-hmm. and we're all weak. But I feel like we don't give permission to make space for that vulnerability, for that weakness, and to call on like God together sometimes.
So what do you do? And I've seen this in both men and women. I think men do it more physically and women do it emotionally. But when somebody stiff arms you, Flo, what are you supposed to do? When they stiff arm you and say, I don't want your help with this.
I would,
assuming most people don't vocalize it. They just, they act, they, that's what you, that you can read from them.
I have one of, well, two responses. If I know them well and I know that they actually do need the space and the time to process by themselves first, I would give them the time and space and say, hey, I'm here for you. I know that you need alone time, but I'm going to check on you. You know, like, so you recognize that that's what they need. They need space. But you also, at the same time, let them know that you're there. And there are others who do want you to knock on the door, but they stiff arm you because they're afraid of getting hurt, or they don't, I don't know, they don't want to talk about it. They just shut down. With those people, I actually do go up to them and say, hey, I know you're hurting. I just want you to know that I'm here. And you don't have to talk about it right now if you're not ready. Yeah. But I, you know, I'll grab their arm, basically, not literally, but, you know, like, I'll grab their arm and say, like, I'm walking with you through this. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's important to show love. It's just really important to show love.
Yeah.
People know if it's coming out of a place of love and care.
Yeah.
Than something else.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah, you asked that. What can we do?
I'm able to provide them.
I think this comes down to what I sort of maybe inferred earlier. If the person is really being challenged frequently and also severely or intensely, that's when you really need to say, maybe professional help is needed, and you help them find professional help too. And you, that's just another level of support. Doesn't mean that if they go and see a therapist or counselor, then spiritual family or friends are not needed. Like, in fact, you need both.
Yeah, definitely.
You can't just have one. So I think it's knowing that, like, if someone is on the level of harming themselves, or like there is a threat to their health, that's also when you really need to say, okay, you know, what's happening? You can ask directly, do you have any thoughts of harming yourself? Any thoughts of suicide? You know, things like that, where you just make it straight to the point and ask them, and it's not a terrible thing to do. We cannot diagnose. We also cannot assume that someone, person A, experiencing depression is the same as person B. So just because you know a friend who has depression doesn't mean that you talk to someone else and you're like all knowledgeable now. Like, even for me as a counselor, I cannot assume that. So we cannot just say, oh, then you must be blah, 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 blah. Or, oh, this is how that has helped that person. Like, you can suggest things, or you can maybe ask further questions to clarify, but yeah, don't have the humility not to assume anything. And also, the last thing that sometimes we often do is we do tend to make sometimes unintentional judgments on someone's faith and how they might be going through a hard time with God as well in a time of mental health challenges. It's hard to deal with, like, well, how come God doesn't heal me? Or, like, why is this so hard? Why am I suffering? How do I deal with pain and know that God is good and loving? Allow them to ask questions, hard questions to God, and, like, sit with them, process with them through it. Don't judge them for, like, well, you know, you should just read the Bible more. You know, like, of course you should read the Bible, but that's not just the only solution to it. And yeah, like I said, just love and grace is really important in that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd put a plug in too for at aletheia.org/mental health on our website. If you just type that in, we've got a list that Flo has very helpfully put together of both Christian counselors in the area that we would recommend if someone is interested in seeing a professional, and also a list of just books about mental health, some about mental health and faith, like walking through depression as a Christian or walking through anxiety. So I'd recommend anybody who's either struggling themselves or has someone in their life who is struggling. That's a really great place to start for some outside resources as well.
I think one last thing I would like to mention is it is not okay to do nothing. Mm-hmm. Like as a spiritual family, you know, we can talk about what we can do, what we can't do. What we can't do is do nothing.
Yeah,
like that's good. You can't just notice that someone's sad and then do nothing. You know, you can't have heard that someone's maybe feeling anxious and then say nothing. Like that's not okay.
Yeah.
If I just also add, like, if you're actually struggling, like, I can't speak for everybody's experiences with Christian counselors, but my experience with a Christian counselor was really meaningful. And really freeing as well. Like he asked me questions I would have never thought to ask myself and that a lot of other people didn't think to ask me. And they were the kinds of questions that like helped me unlock ways that I was thinking that were like poisonous and like not helpful and like leading me to sort of, what's the word? Like catastrophize, like that means
big word,
when
Tyler.
Thank you. it means when you have like one thought and when the thought goes astray, you like go straight to like the worst possible outcome. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like trapped in a pattern of doing that. And then like talking to my counselor, like helped free me of this kind of vicious cycle of always thinking the worst was coming because of some minor mistake or error that I made or something like that. So that's just a plug for going to see a Christian counselor. It's like a really awesome place, a safe place. You don't feel judged there, and you can really get some freedom. So, yeah.
Yeah, amen.
What I'm going to ask this question, maybe this is pertinent. If it stinks, Tyler, you can cut it out. Okay. I'll let Flo decide.
My scissors are at the ready.
For the person who's listening to this podcast and they're like, you know, I'm struggling with some stuff. Do I need to go to Christian counseling or do I just need to suck it up and deal with it? How do you divide between those two things? Or, because I feel like sometimes there's a lot of gray in this.
There is a lot of gray. I think in those cases, wise counsel goes a long way.
Through the,
through that process, you'll be able to also discern, like, should I be seeking further professional help, or, you know, there are some things that I do need to deal with and I'm just not being honest with myself.
Yeah. No.
Right. Like, you know, all of this honesty and like vulnerability and honesty goes a long way. And
sure.
Like people that you can trust who walk alongside you also go a long way. We can't fix each other, but we can support and love and encourage each other and remind each other of Jesus's healing in our lives.
Yeah.
As well as the tools that's been given to us, including counselors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think it's like powerful that Jesus himself, like in the Garden of Gethsemane, like he's like really going through something. Like the kind of pressure and weight that would cause you to sweat blood and like weep as you're like praying.
And he's pulling other people into that.
Yeah. You know, he's like asking Peter and John and all the other disciples to be praying for him.
Yeah.
And then Jesus says like, Father, like if this cup can pass from me, like let it. I bet that like there's somebody out there who's struggling with depression or some other like mental issue that's like, that's how you feel right now. Right.
Mm.
And he says like, nevertheless, not my will be done, but your will be done. And it's like in that moment that God, the John says that God sends angels to minister to him, to Jesus, right? To like help bring him through that moment. Right. So it's, again, it's not, generally speaking, like there are some things that you just don't suck up and deal with. Like, you need angels to minister to you. You need brothers and sisters to be praying with you. And that's like what the body of Christ is.
Yeah.
Right? It's not that like when the liver gets sick, the liver handles it. The white blood cells also, right? Like the white blood cells like come that's and they help. And you know what I mean? It's medical. Like we're the body. Like if we want to be the body and act like the body, we have to let the body be the body. And that sometimes means inviting other people into the struggles that you have. So.
Yeah, we're supposed to be interdependent.
Yeah, I think that's key. What you said, transparency, honesty, like bringing people into your junk, man. That's not easy.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, as the staff here at Lathia, that we are available and want to support you.
Yeah.
You know, I can't talk to everybody, but
yeah.
I mean, I'm definitely open to talk to anyone who wants to have a chat. So
sure. And we want that both out of love, but also kind of selfishly, because over time, if our church struggles, we struggle too. Mm-hmm. We want to be marked by health. Because you know, the whole purpose of what we do is because there's joy in this message. God calls us to a life of joy, overflowing, you know, abundant joy. And not that we don't walk through hard times, not that there's not challenges, not that's but and not that necessarily you're doing it wrong if you're having a tough moment, but the ultimate reality is us walking in joy. And so when we have these struggles, yeah, let's talk about them. Let's flesh them out and let's continue to grow.
Nice.
All right, leaders.
Huh? Should we thank Flo?
Sarah's going to thank Flo now.
Am I doing the outro or am I?
You can do it. Yeah, go for it. Yes. Yeah. All right, Sarah, take us home.
All right, leaders. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Flo. Flo, thank you so much. If you're walking with someone through something and you feel in over your head, we as a staff team are here. Group leaders, your section leaders are here for you. Yep. Definitely don't feel like this is something you need to figure out on your own or off of a podcast, but something we can walk through as a family. So thank you, Flo. And thanks, leaders. We look forward to talking with you again soon.